Okay, we're starting with the two dots on the bottom of Kuf Tet Amud Bet. Tanya, I'm Rabbi Yeshua ben Brachia. B'tchila kolo omer alei la. Anybody told me that I should ascend to, meaning take a position of power, a position of kavod, ani kofto v'notno d'fnei ari. I would tie him up and throw him in front of a lion. Ata, now that I've already reached that status, kolo omer li leired mi mena. Anybody who suggests that I should give up my power, my position of kavod, or they want to depose me, I pour on top of him an urn full of hot water. So the idea being that power, as we noted before, is intoxicating. It's alluring. And when you're outside of it, you can resist it. But once you've now come into that power, it's very hard to give it up. It's very hard to leave it. And we know that Yeshua ben Prachia is one of the Zugot at the beginning of Avot, and he was a Nasi. He was appointed as a Nasi along with Nitai Harbeli, who was the Av Beit Din. And so he was someone who eventually did ascend to power and become the Nasi. And he speaks about the difficulty of disengaging from such a position once they had already reached that level of power or Kavod. Sharei, and here it gives a proof to it, Shaul Barach Mimena. He ran away from it. Originally, when Shmuel wants to anoint him as the king, he tries to dissent. He says, I'm not worthy. He's so humble. Ugashala. And once he did reach that position of Malchut, Bikesh Laroget David. When he thought that David was going to take over, somehow David was going to become the king, or people were favoring David, starts to chase him down and try to kill him because of that. So the Marsha here notes the difference in his reaction. In the first case, he ties someone up and throws them in front of a lion, just a quasi-passive type of dismissal or ridding oneself of the problem. Whereas in the second case, it's kumkum shomayim. He personally puts the hot water on top of the individual, showing you again the tremendous lure of the power that beforehand, when he was dismissing it or trying to demur, he did it in a way that he didn't have to try so hard. He didn't have to push so hard. But when he already got into power, then he had took a real active role in ensuring that he remained in power and that he didn't lose that position of power. That would be the explanation then. So now, Rashi over here brings two explanations to the Gemara. One explanation is the way that we explained it, and it works well because then Shaharei, the example brought about David and Shaul, makes sense then in that context. But he does have an alternate explanation over here, which is the first version that Rashi brings of this actually emends the Lashon. And the Baalei Tosafot testified to the fact that that was the Girsot in the Gemara, which was that B'tchila kol ha'omer ola u'mincha. In the beginning, not beginning in the first place, but in the beginning before they brought their korban, person who says alai ola or alai mincha, ani matil alav kumkum shamayim. I used to dump an urn of hot water on them because you are obligating yourself in a neder, which is a very dangerous thing, and we shun taking such nidarim in order not to get into the trouble of not being mekayim nidarim. The psukim tell us it's better not to take a neder than to take a neder and not be mekayim the neder. And so that was the nature of the statement over here. As the Baalei Tosafot note, that it should have been found somewhere else. It doesn't belong over here. It belongs in the Sugyot that deal with Harei Alai Ola. And second of all, contextually, what does it have to do with Shaul and David? It would seem to me that if you have that explanation, you'd have to move Sharei Shaul Barach Mimenu Shalah B'Kesh Roget David to before this Braita, because then it would be the continuation of the previous Gemara, where the Chachamim concluded, Mazesh Barach Mimenu Kach HaMivakesh Lered La Alachat Kama V'Kama. Then it would be a continuation of that previous piece, and then you have to say that Tanya is a totally separate piece. And then Tosfot says a very interesting thing. He says that Rabbeinu Pulamus, Aviv Shel Rabbeinu Meshulam, Higia K'Lashon Sheni B'Shat P'tirato. He amended the Gemara to read like the second Lashon of Rashi when he passed away. Sofer Ta'ab Ben Allah Le'Ola. And that the difference in the word Ola, which is Harei Alai Ola, versus Allah or Alei, to go up and to ascend to power, that was the mistake of the Sofer, and he amends it to read Aleh rather than Ola, or the Girsa that we have in our Gemara right now. And then the Tosafot goes on to explain that at the time of his death, he made three emendations to Shas, three places in Shas where something wasn't explainable, like here, and he changed the Girsa And he says it was on his deathbed, and it was as if he got a Ruach Hashem and a Nevuah, and he made these corrections in Shas. And the Rabbi, the Tosafot here notes, one in Zvachim, one in Shavuot, and one over here. And they obviously took them very seriously, including the fact that the Girsa that we have in our Gemara now follow this latter view in Rashi, as well as the Girsa as amended by Rabbeinu Kolomus. Amar lei mark shisha b'reid Rav Chisla b'ayit. Rabbi Meir, haikra de Rabbi Yehuda, may avilei. That posuk of Rabbi Yehuda, what does Rabbi Meir do with it? Before we had the machloket as to whether Beit Konyo was a Beit Avodah Zarah, Beit Konyo was l'shem Shemayim. So Rabbi Yehuda said it was l'shem Shemayim, and he brought the posuk that said that on that day, there'll be a Mizbeach l'shem in Eretz Mitzrayim. The fulfillment of that would be in Beit Konyo. According to Rabbi Meir, the Beit Konyo was a Beit Avodah Zarah. How does he explain that posuk? That on that day, there'll be a Mizbeach l'shem in Mitzrayim. Look at Tanya. He would use it for this braita, Achar Mapulto Shel Sancheriv, after the downfall of Sancheriv, after he is defeated, Yatsa Chizkiyahu Matzah Bnei Melachim Shel Yoshvim Bikronot Shel Zav, went out and he found all these princes that were sitting in chariots or wagons of gold. Hey Diran, he forced them to take a nether, Shelo Lavod Avodat Kochavim, that they wouldn't worship Avodah Zarah. These princes or these kings were gathered by Sancheriv on his trekking through all the different countries that he conquered. And so along the way, he picked up all of these captives that were these princes and these kings. After the defeat of Sancheriv at the walls of Yerushalayim, so then these individuals were still left there, maybe even in shock about what had happened, because it was a dramatic Yad Hashem that defeats Sancheriv, and overnight the army is decimated. There, and Chizkiyahu comes out, it makes them promise that they're not going to go back to Avodah Zarah. Shenemar, it's the pasuk right before the pasuk that was quoted by Rabbi Yehuda, which is Bayomahu, Yeh Chamesh Arim Be'eretz Mitzrayim. There'll be five cities in Eretz Mitzrayim, Midabrot Sfat Canaan, that are speaking the language of Canaan. The language of Canaan, as Rashi says, is Sfat Yisrael or Yeshevet Be'eretz Canaan. Nobody's Canaanite anymore. It's those that lived in Eretz Canaan, which means Bnei Yisrael, which means that they're speaking Hebrew, or they're speaking the language of the Jews, v'nishba'ot Hashem tzvakot, and they're taking shvuot to Hashem. The idea being that there is this enclave of individuals who, when they went back to their origins, they went with this neder or shvuah that they taken to Chizkiyah, not to worship Avodah Zarah, rather to worship Hashem. Halchu l'Alexandria shel Mitzrayim, so they went to Alexandria, ubanu mizbeach, ve'alu alav l'shem Shemayim. And they were makriv korbanot on it, l'shem Shemayim, shnemar, and then that's the subsequent pasuk in Yeshayahu, v'yomu yeh mizbeach l'shem b'toch Eretz Mitzrayim. On that day, there will be a mizbeach l'shem in Eretz Mitzrayim, and that's a reference to these individuals who Chizkiyahu had convinced to become monotheistic and give up their practices of Avodah Zarah. That's evidenced by these cities that are set up in Mitzrayim, and the practices in Mitzrayim, that on that day there was a Zbeach L'Hashem etoch Eretz Mitzrayim. Ironically, it turns out then, according to Rabbi Meir, the Mizbeach that is built here is a Mizbeach L'Hashem, meaning at the time of Sancheriv, when they returned to Alexandria Mitzrayim, they build some sort of Mizbeach or temple L'Hashem. On the other hand, when the Jews build a temple in Beit Chonyo, they make it L'Avodah Zarah. So the Goyim are making it L'Shem Shemayim, and the Jews are making it L'Shem Avodah Zarah. So that's just ironically the explanation that Rabbi Meir is giving. Then the Gemara says about the pasuk that we quoted before, about the five cities in Eretz Mitzrayim. Once we're already darshaning it, they darshan the remainder of that pasuk, which is Ir HaHeres Ge'amer Le'achat. The city of Heres is one of them, meaning one of the five cities that's in Mitzrayim that's speaking Hebrew. My Ir HaHeres Ge'amer Le'achat. What is the meaning of that? Kedimitargim Rav Yosef. Like Rav Yosef translates, we have this refrain a number of times in Shas. Clear that Rabbi Yosef was an expert in Targum. Question as to why he was an expert in Targum. Was that just happened to be that he was an expert in Targum? Or is it related to the fact that Rabbi Yosef lost his eyesight at one point, became an Iver, and then he was under the restriction of Dvarim Shebichtav, Iyata Rashay Lomram Baal Peh. Things that are written, Torah, Torah Shebichtav, you're not allowed to say them orally. So it means you need to read them Mitoch HaKtav. And Rabbi Yosef, who was blind, couldn't do that. So then he opted to learn Torah in Targum, which is not restricted by that, rather than in Torah Shebichtav. So that might have contributed to his expertise in Targum. But again, numerous places in Shas, the Gemara says, we want to understand a pasuk They write Kidmetargim Rav Yosef. The way Rav Yosef translates it, Karta de Beit Shemesh. It is the city of Beit Shemesh. Da'atid me'chareiv. In the future, it is going to be destroyed. Amer dehi chada minhom. That is one of those five cities that we were speaking about. Umay de'ira heres lishna de'shimshahi. How do you know ira heres is a reference to Beit Shemesh? Dichtiv, because it says in Iyov, Perek in Iyov, where it begins, Payan Iyov v'yomar, amnam yadati ki chayin, umay tzlagak eno shimkel. I know that that is so, but man cannot win against God. And then gives a list of items where man doesn't even hold up a candle to God. And it says, Homer lacheres velo yisrach, bad kochavim yachtom, who commands the sun not to shine, or seals up the stars, meaning these are the powers that Hashem has. Who's going to hold a candle to Hashem? And there it says, Homer lacheres velo yisrach, who speaks to the sun, and tells it not to shine or not to rise. So there you see the word cheres, playing on the word like heres, is a reference to the sun. And therefore the ir haheres is Beit Shemesh. And it is a well-known city that was in Mitzrayim. It has the Greek name Heliopolis, because of Helios, refers to the sun, and Beit Shemesh. The Egyptians worshipped the sun god called Ra. And there was this very large temple that was established in Beit Shemesh that is destroyed and actually leveled to the ground by the Romans in what is seen as a kiyum of this nevuah in Yeshayahu, that the ir acheres, the city of the sun, or the city of the sun god, would be harus, will be destroyed. That nevuah seen as coming to fruition when the city is leveled in the times of the Romans. There's a lot to be said about that, especially given that Ra is the sun god of Mitzrayim, and the Egyptians worshipped the sun, and it was an integral part of their Avodah Zarah. And that might be the explanation, first of all, of a number of things in the Torah, including Paro's name. Paro's name is made up of Ra in the middle, which is the god Ra, and therefore the name Pharaoh, Paro, comes from probably Ra. It also might explain the pasuk, as Rashi notes, when Bnei Yisrael worshipped the Egel, and Moshe's trying to beseech Hashem not to destroy Bnei Yisrael, he says, "Lama yomru Mitzrayim ki bira'a hotziam la'rogotam b'midbar." And Rashi notes it, but bira'a is a reference possibly to the god of Mitzrayim. Ki bira'a hotziam, that it was all the sun god or the god of Mitzrayim that came and then destroyed Bnei Yisrael because they left Mitzrayim. And again, in Parshat Shmot, we also have the word ra used there. Again, maybe a reference to the god of the sun. It might also explain why there's so much focus for the Jewish nation, on a Chodesh Zelechem, which is on the lunar calendar, and on a lunar year. In opposition to the view of Mitzrayim that focuses on the sun, the Jewish religion and the Jewish calendar focuses on the moon as the antithesis to Mitzrayim. We find a number of those items, including the fact that Mitzrayim was the breadbasket of the ancient world, and Bnei Yisrael are commanded when they leave Mitzrayim to eat matzot and not chametz. And so there are a number of these items where Bnei Yisrael are asked to do just the opposite of what happens in Mitzrayim, in some sense to distance themselves from the culture and the worship of the peoples of Mitzrayim. Again, much more to say about it, but this Beit HaShemesh, or Beit HaCheres, is a part and parcel of that which we see with Heliopolis, the sun city that was found in Mitzrayim, where they worshiped the sun god. So that is what's being mentioned here in Yeshayahu, and it's also mentioned explicitly in Yirmiyahu, the place was called Beit Shemesh. The pasuk in Yeshayahu Mem Gimel, which is actually the Haftorah for Parshat Bereishit, says, "Havi banai merachok, should bring my children from afar, ubnotai mikzeh haaretz, and my daughters from the edges of the earth. Havi banai merachok, bring my children, my sons from afar, Ravuna ila galiot shel Bavel." That's speaking to the galut of Bavel. Shidatan miyushevet alehen kibanim. They are calmer, more relaxed. They are living in a place of serenity, like boys do. And that's why it says, bring my banim from Merachok, and that's a reference to those that live in Bavel. They live with a sense of tranquility, and they are compared to banim because the man's tranquility is less likely to be overturned or upset. Rashi claims that the reason that they were living in such calmness was because they did not have Shibud Malchiot. They were given autonomy inside of Bavel, and so they didn't live under the threat or the auspices of another authority. They had their own autonomous governments that worked with inside the, whether it was the Babylonian or Persian areas, but they were still not really persecuted in that area, as opposed to the other Galiot. The other possibility is to do with the tremendous erudition and limud Torah that existed in Babel, where there were Talmidei Chachamim, and the Torah was centered there for many years. That might be the reference to Babel being calmer. Ubenotai Mikzei Haaretz, Elu Galiot Shel Shaar Haaretzot. That refers to the exiles in the other lands, Shein Datan Mishevet Alein Kibanot, where they're not settled, or they're not at ease, like the more fragile tranquility of the woman, which can be disturbed much more easily. And that's a reference to the Galiot outside of Babel. Because again, either they lived under the authority of the local area, they were subjected to Shibud Galiot, or they didn't have those centers of Torah to help them out. And so for that reason, there's a different description about the Galut Babel versus the other Galiot. Amar Rabbi Abba bar Rabbi Yitzchak, Amar Rabbi Chista, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Amar Rav, Mi Tzur Ve'ad Kartigni, from Tzur, which is Tyre, the city on the Mediterranean coast up in Lebanon. Kartigni is a reference to Carthage, which is somewhat northwest of Tunis on the North African coast, which was also a Phoenician city. It was settled by the Phoenician traders that came from Tyre. Tyre was known as a major hub of trade in the Phoenician time. It's a major, major city, a major shipping hub. And they also traveled out throughout the Mediterranean, and they settled all the way as far as Kartigni, out in Carthage. Carthage was a major city, even into the Roman times, destroyed or flattened by the Roman conquest when they took out the Phoenicians, and then rebuilt by Julius Caesar and became, again, a very, very important shipping and trade city. So in those areas, Makirimit Israel, Vitavim Shebishamayim, they know about Bnei Israel, and they know about the God of Israel. And Rashi says over here that they Makirimit Israel B'Kvodan HaRishon, they Machvidim Olam, and therefore they do not pressure them too much, or they don't impose on them so much, because they remember when the Jews were ascendant. But those that had no exposure or didn't have interactions with them when they were ascendant, they treat them poorly or they weigh on them heavily because they don't remember them ever being an ascendant nation. So basically within the international shipping area of the civilized world, that time period, which basically ran from Tyre until Carthage, so there Jews were well known, both because they were familiar from the Phoenicians in Tyre, but also because Jews settled in those areas where the Phoenician traders went, and they also opened up businesses and were involved in the trade in those areas. And so people were familiar with them. But on the other hand, outside of those areas, Umitzur klapei marav, umkadigne klapei mizrach, ein makirim et Yisrael. Outside of that, they don't know about Jews, and they don't know about the God in heaven. It's somewhat cryptic over here, because it should be from Tzur to the east, and Kartigni to the west. But over here it says Mitzur Klapei Marav. Because Tyre is in the northeastern section of the Mediterranean, and Carthage is in the southwestern side of the Mediterranean, then areas that are west of Tyre, which means that they are really northwest of the Tyre area, those weren't areas where Jews were known. Similarly with Carthage, those are the southeast of that area. The Jews weren't known. The main area of the Jews is basically the area of Eretz Yisrael, and to the west of Eretz Yisrael, those trading areas that were frequented by the peoples that lived close to Eretz Yisrael and were out on trade there. But beyond that, to the northwest and to the southeast, the Jews were less well known in those areas. Although it would still make a lot more sense if you transpose the words Mizrach and Marav, because then it would make sense. Those to the east of Tyre and those to the west of Carthage were not as familiar with Klal Yisrael. Eitave Rav Shimi Bar Chiya the Rav. Rav Shimi Bar Chiya says to Rav, it says, Ki mi mizrach shemesh ve'ad mevo'o gadol shemi bagoyim ubechol makom muktar mugash lishmi umincha tehora. Ki gadol shemi bagoyim amar shem tzfakot. If you take the posuk in Malachi, which is the Haftorah for Parshat Toldot, it says, mi mizrach shemesh, from the eastern rise of the sun, v'ad mivo'o, till it sets, till where it goes, to the western side, which, of course, the sun from east to west covers the entire inhabited world. Gadol shmi bagoyim. My name is well known, is famous amongst the nations. Mechol makom, in every place under the sun, muktar umugash lishmi. There are things that are sacrificed, delivered in my name, umincha Torah, as well as the mincha Torah that is brought, these pure flower offerings that are brought on my behalf. Amrale shimiat. Rav says back to him, is that shimi? So Rashi brings two interpretations. Either he was surprised that he would ask such a question. The answer is so obvious. Why would you ask the question? He's saying, is this you, Shimi, who they say is a great Talmud Chacham, and you're asking this question? Or Rashi then brings an alternate pshat, which is that Rav was very tzanua, and he never looked up. He always was looking down, so he didn't know who was speaking before him. He heard Rav Shimi's voice, and he wasn't sure. So he's saying, Shimiat? Is that you, Shimi, who's asking the question? The answer to your question is not that they don't know about God, but they accept God as being the God of gods, or the ultimate God. Everybody accepts God as being the superior or ultimate God. It's the question of whether you see him as being the primary God, or you see some other intermediaries that sit in between, which are the Avodah Zarah, which is very reminiscent of the Rambam's description of the development of Avodah Zarah in his Hilchot Avodah Zarah, where he says originally everybody worshipped God, and the deviation really came not because people went to worship Avodah Zarah, but rather they began to worship the Medians, who were the messengers of God, or those that represented God. If they didn't think they were worshiping those items, they worshiped them as a way to get to God, but eventually it was forgotten that that was the case, and slowly it developed that they start to worship those things individually. So there is this hierarchy within the world of the gods, where everybody recognizes Hashem as being the ultimate God, but it has some Aristotelian view here that God, once he created the world, backed away from the world and left it alone. And that's what it means, Elokai d'Elokai. He's the one way above. He's the one on top of everything, but not that he's actively involved in the world anymore, which is the very, very Aristotelian view that the Rambam tries to fight against, that Hashem is actively involved in the world. And so that would be the difference between the Pasuk in Malachi that describes the God being the God of everyone versus what we just said, that the God and Yisrael are only known in the small areas where Bnei Yisrael track and where they trade and where they live. The Gemara says, Muktar umugash lishmi b'chol makom sakadatka. How could it be that they are doing haktarot and hagashot, the Shem Hashem, in any place? Meaning that there is a place where you bring your korbanot to Hashem. You bring your offerings to Hashem. That's the Beit HaMikdash. Why is it happening anywhere? So I'm Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachmani, I'm Rabbi Yonatan. Eilu Talmidei Chachamim Ha'oskim B'Torah B'chol Makom. That's not a reference to real korbanot. It's a reference to the Talmidei Chachamim that are involved and who diligently learn the Torah. Malei Ani Alehem Kilu Makterim U'Magishim L'Shmi. When they learn Torah, I equate it to, I feel as if it is, they bring in korbanot before me. So therefore the Torah that's learned in all these different places is as if korbanot are being brought in those places. U'mincha Torah, what is that reference in the pasuk of Mincha Torah? Ze alamei Torah b'tahara. That's someone who learns Torah in purity. Yoshev, nosei isha, v'achakach lomei Torah. He first gets married, and then he learns Torah. So that way he doesn't have these improper thoughts, doesn't get involved in improper things. He gets married, so he takes care of those desires, and then he can sit calmly and learn Torah. It's interesting that the Gemara here only gives a one-sided approach to this, as the Bali Tosafot note, but it's a famous Gemara in Kiddushin that has a machloket about this. What is better? Is it better to get married and then learn Torah? Or is it better to learn Torah and then get married? The expression that the Gemara in Kiddushin uses is, Rechaim b'tzavaro v'yasok b'torah. He's got a millstone around his neck, and he's going to be able to learn Torah, in that there are burdens to being married, and those responsibilities are going to take you away from the ability to learn Torah. The Gemara in Kiddushin concludes, Halan haluhu. That's for us, and that's for them. One of those refers to Bnei Eretz Yisrael, and one of those refers to Bnei Bavel. There's a machloket Rishonim over there, Rashi and the Bali HaTosafot argue, about which is referencing to Bavel, and which is referencing to Eretz Yisrael. Rashi claims that the Bnei Bavel used to get married, and then they'd come learn in Eretz Yisrael. And since their wives were back home in Bavel, they didn't have to worry about taking care of their wives, because their wives were by themselves in Babel, and therefore they could come to Eretz Yisrael and learn Torah. They basically abandoned their wives over there, versus those that lived in Eretz Yisrael, where their wives were local. So if they got married, then they would have to carry the burden of taking care of their wives because they were local, and therefore it would disturb their limud Torah. That's the way Rashi learns it. Rashi's position is bolstered by other Rishonim in saying that the practice in Babel was that the women would go out to work and support their husbands. So when the husband went to Eretz Yisrael to learn, he wasn't burdened by supporting his household because the wife back home was working. In Eretz Yisrael, the women did not work, and therefore the burden was on the husband. So if he got married, he would have to then support his wife and wouldn't be able to learn. On the other hand, the Baalei Tosafot say that it was just the opposite. Whereas Tosafot criticizes that view of Rashi and says it was just the opposite. That the B'nai Bavel shouldn't get married and then come and learn. First of all, they're going to be abandoning their wives back in Bavel, which was inappropriate. And number two is the B'nai Bavel were poor. And if they got married, they would have to support their families and wouldn't be able to come and learn. The other hand, B'nai Yisrael, who lived close proximity to their wives, so they could get married and not abandon their wives by learning in Eretz Yisrael. But beyond that, they were also wealthy, and they didn't necessarily need to work right away. And for that reason, they could go and learn even after they had gotten married. All right, Shir HaMaalot, Hinei Baruchu Et Hashem, Kol Ovdei Hashem, Omdi Bevet Hashem Belailot. The Song of Ascents, Bless Hashem, all those that worship Hashem, who stand in the house of Hashem at night. Ma Belailot. What does it mean, at night? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Elu Tamidei Chachamim Oskim B'Torah B'Laila. It refers to the Tamidei Chachamim who learn Torah at night. Malei Aleim HaKutub Kilu Oskim B'Avuda. It's the Pasuk makes it as if they are doing Avoda. So they're considered as if they're standing in the Migdash of Hashem at night. So we're going to equate their learning of Torah at night to doing Avoda in the Migdash. As if they're standing and doing Avoda in the Migdash. Lo'olam Zot Al Yisrael. So this is found in Divrei Yamim. When Shlomo HaMelech goes to build the Beit HaMikdash, he sends to Hiram Melech Tzor to tell him that he needs wood in order to build the Bayit, and is beseeching him to bring the wood. He explains why he's asking him for these supplies and his help, both relying on the alliance that was forged in the time of his father David HaMelech, as well as explaining him the purpose of this Bayit that he's going to build. And he says about that, Hinei ani bono Bayit, l'shem Hashem Elokai, in Shlomo's speech, so in that Chanukah Bayit, he says, here I am building a Bayit, I'm building a house for Hashem, that people will come, Lagdishlo, in order to be sanctified for his name, and to bring Torah, or to bring Korbanot before him. And then the pasuk ends, Lo'olam Zot Al Yisrael. And this always will be the case for Klal Yisrael, that they will always be bringing Korbanot in this Mikdash. Obviously that's not the case, because the Mikdash is at some point going to be destroyed. And how can you say, Lo'olam Zot Al Yisrael? So Amar Rav Gidol Amar Rav, Zem Mizbeach Banui. That's referencing to the Mizbeach that is built. Michael, Sarah Gadol, Omeidu Makriv Alav Korban. And Michael, the great ministering angel, is standing there and bringing korbanot. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Elu Tamidei Chachamim, Oskim Be'Ilchot Avuda. This is a reference to the Tamidei Chachamim who are involved in learning the dinim, the Torah of Avoda and korbanot. Malei Aleihem HaKetuv, Kilu Nivneh Mikdash B'Yomeihem. It attributes, or it credits them, as if the Beit HaMikdash was rebuilt in their time, which is this idea, which we're going to see repeated a couple times here, that the learning and the studying of the Inyanei Korbanot and the Inyanei Avodah is Malei Alav HaKetuv. The Pasuk Lo views that as if one has brought Korbanot. And that's again when we did the introduction to Zvachim, we spoke about the importance of learning Kodoshim because of this issue, which is we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, we don't have Korbanot. One of the important things is that we have the ability to do that through Nishamo Parim Sfateinu, which is through the davening and through the learning of these items to simulate the effect of bringing those korbanot. So Amar Reish Lakish, Mai Dichtiv, what is meant in the Torah when it says, Zota Torah, La Ula, La Mincha, Ula Chatat, Ula Hasham, Kol Osek B'Torah, Kilu Yikriv Ula, Mincha, Chatat, V'Hasham. That's why it says, Zota Torah, instead of saying, Zot HaChuka, Rashi says. It could have said, Zot HaChuka, rather it says, Zot HaTorah, Torah meaning a reference to learning. Even though the word Torah in the Torah itself means a set of instructions or guidelines, And so that's what the meaning is in these psukim, Zotarat HaChatat, Zotarat Ola. That means these are the instructions. These are the guidelines for bringing Ola, bringing a Chatat. Nevertheless, the Gemara views the word Torah in the way that we use it, in the colloquial sense, that Torah means to learn Torah, to be engaged in the Limudah Torah. So Reish Lakish takes that at face value and says, Zotah Torah. This is the Limud of Torah. So what does Limud of Torah have to do? Ola, Mincha, Chatat, Nasham. Teaches you that Kol Osek, anybody who's engaged in the Limud of Torah, Gilui Piv Ola, Mincha, Chatat, Vasham. It's as if he brought all of these korbanot. Amarava, Hai Le'ola, Le'mincha. The way that you're describing it, the prepositions on the words don't make sense. Why does it say Le'ola, Le'mincha? It should say Ola, U'mincha, Mibayle. It should stay straight up. Zoto Torah. Then, if the person is engaged in Torah, then it is Ola Mincha. It's considered as if he brings an Ola Mincha. The way the pasuk is written, it says Le Ola Le Mincha. That doesn't make sense the way that you're explaining it. Zot Torah. This is the learning Le Ola for an Ola. It's not for an Ola. It is to be an Ola. So he says the preposition is incorrect. El Amarava Kol Osek B'Torah Ein Tzarich Lo Ola V'Lo Mincha V'Lo Hashem. Lo Chatat, Lo Hashem. Person who is engaged in Limud HaTorah doesn't need an Ola, doesn't need a Mincha, and doesn't need an Hashem. As Rashi says over here, Tachi Mashmot. And this is how you explain the pasuk. Zot HaTorah LeOla Klomar. Bimkom HaOla. This is the Torah for the Ola. Meaning in place of the Ola. LeMincha. In place of the Mincha. It replaces them, it displaces them, and that's how you read the pasuk. Alright, Amar Rav Yitzchak, my dichtiv, what is meant by the psukim that by specify each of the korbanot? Zot Torah Tachatat, v'zot Torah Tasham, kol osek b'Torat Chatat, gilui kriv Chatat. Anybody who engages in matters of the Chatat, as if he brought a Chatat. Kol osek b'Torat Hashem, gilui kriv Hashem. Anyone who engages in the Torah of the Hashem, it's as if he brought an Hashem. Again, we quoted these memorot in the beginning of Zvachim, but obviously this is a strong endorsement of the limud that we've just engaged in, both in Zvachim and Menachot, being engaged in limud HaTorah with regards to Kodoshim, because it credits one as if they have brought those korbanot, and one who's engaged in Torah, maybe even more broadly, not just in Kodoshim, also is credited as if they brought korbanot, or doesn't need the korbanot, or as if done avoda in the Beit HaMikdash. Now, there's one important line here, which Balei Tosfot take note of, and then has ramifications vis-a-vis our davening every day, and that is, Tosfot says over here, Midrashot Chalukim Yesh. We have a contradicting Midrashot. Yesh Mishomer Nishmoteim Shel Tzadikim. When Michael, the great prince amongst the angels, is being Makriv Korbanot on that Mizbeach up above, some say that he's bringing the Nishmot of the Tzadikim, the Nishmot of the Tzadikim. V'yesh Mishomer Kvasim Shel Esh. He's bringing sheep of fire that he's putting on Mizbeach. V'hainu da'amrinan b'shmonesre. Ba'avoda v'ishe Yisrael. And that is the reference in Ritzei to the Ishe Yisrael. U'tfilatam meheirab avatekabel beratzon. That the Ishe Yisrael should be accepted along with our tfilot. V'yesh romim d'kayalel. Some say it goes on the previous part of the bracha, which is v'shevet avoda l'dvir beitecha v'ishe Yisrael. What the Balei Tosfot point out is, how you parse Ritzei will then actually reflect on the machloket of Midrashim over here, which is, are you saying that Ritzei Hashem Akenu Bamcha Yisrael b'tfilotam v'shevet avoda l'dvir beitecha v'ishe Yisrael, period. Hashevet avoda, bring back the avoda v'ishe Yisrael and the korbanot of Bnei Yisrael, and then afterwards it begins u'tfilotam b'avat tekabel beratzon. Their tfilot should be accepted. So one part is about return of the avodah. That's the first part. And then the second part is about accepting their tfilot. That would be like the view of the Midrash that says that he was makriv kvasim shalish, which is bring back the avodah, and the avodah down below, which is reflected by avodah up above, bring that back. And right now, tfilatam bavat kabel beratzon, that today in the interim, accept their tfilot. But if you parse it the other way, it says, period. So that both their tfilot and the Ishe Yisrael should be accepted. That means that there are Ishe Yisrael going on right now. And that would be a reference to the Midrash that it's the Nishmotan Shel Tzadikim that Michael is being makrib on the Mizbeach, the reference is to that. And then we're saying, Ishe Yisrael Utfilatam, except both their Nishamot, the Ishe Yisrael, the fires of the Jews, meaning the Nishamot of the Jews that are being makrab, and the Tfilot that they have over here. So that would be the other way to read it. How you parse where Ishe Yisrael is found actually influences how you interpret the Midrashim over here. And the Tur in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Kufchaf brings down three different possibilities as to what the interpretation of Ishe Yisrael is. He says, one possibility is, V'Ishe Yisrael, V'apofi she'ina ta'avuda, mitpalim ala tfila, she'hi b'makom korban, she'takabel b'ratzom. So even though we have no korbanot today, the Ishe Yisrael is not a reference to korbanot, it's a reference to our tfilot, which are b'makom korbanot. U'bidrash, the second interpretation is, Yesh Michael Sar Gadol makrib nishmatan shel tzadikim ala mizbeach shel mala, Vazetiknu Ishe Yisrael, which was the first Midrash brought in the Tosafot, when you include Ishe Yisrael along with its tefillot to be accepted. Ishe Yisrael is a reference to the Nishmaton Shel Tzadikim. V'yesh Mashparshim, the third way to interpret it, which was the other way that Tosafot mentioned, is that Oto Amashem Alamalo Yimenu, goes on what was before, that we ask him to bring back the Avoda and the Ishe Yisrael. The Taz, commenting on the tour, says that the first and last interpretation that he brings down don't really make sense. He says, Perisha Rishon Kasha, Kafel Tfilatam. He says, you're duplicating the word Tfilatam. You say Ishe Yisrael represents Tfilah, and we're saying, please accept the Ishe Yisrael Utfilatam. You're saying, accept their Tfilah and their Tfilah. So you're duplicating it. He does suggest maybe it means Tfilah Bizmana, Tfilah Shalom Bizmana, but that's a press type of answer. He says, the last way to explain it, which is that, Vashevet Avoda Devir Bitecha of Ishe Yisrael, he says that also is a duplication, because why do you need Ishe Yisrael when you already said Vashevet Avoda? If you say bring back the Avoda, why do you have to tell me to bring back Ishe Yisrael? That's synonymous with Avoda. And therefore he says, Aperish Amtsai Amuvchar B'Kulan, the middle interpretation, which is the hardest interpretation, because in a sense it's the most esoteric, which is that it's referencing to Michael, the Sarah Gadol being Makriv, the Nishmotem Shel the Tzadikim up above. And we're saying the Ishe Yisrael. Those Ishe Yisrael should be accepted before you. Those Nishmoteim Shel Tzadikim that are Makrav before you, they should be accepted. And he says that's the best interpretation of the three of the Tur. The Gra over there says, V'aleikar k'pei shacharon. You can see that the Gra would not favor that type of interpretation. And the Gra says that the latter of the three explanations of the Tur is the most likely, which is that it's a reference to Mashal Amalim Menu. Vashevet Avoda v'Ishe Yisrael, that should bring back the worship of Hashem, the Avoda and the Mikdash, and the Ishe Yisrael. Alright, now, the last Mishnah. Nemar ba'ola t'beima. It says, by an ola, Ishe Reach Nichoach, la'Hashem. It says, ba'ola ta'of, Ishe Reach Nichoach, la'Hashem. Or b'mincha. By mincha it says, Ishe Reach Nichoach, la'Hashem. Uses the same expression in each of these cases to tell you that this will be pleasing before Hashem, despite the fact that there are major differences between these korbanot. We're talking about an animal, a bird, and a mincha. Lo la'amar lecha, to come to teach you the very famous refrain, echad hamarbeh ve'echad hamamit, doesn't matter how much or how little, ubevad shikavein libo la'shamayim. As long as you're bringing it for the right reasons and for the right purposes, as long as your dedication is to bring it to Hashem, it's irrelevant how much or how little you bring. It's more about your attitude and your mindset when you bring it, then the actual size or quantity of the item that you bring. Amar Rabbi Zera, Ma'ikra, what's the pasuk that teaches you that? So we've had a pasuk in Kohelet that says, Mituka shnat ho'veit ima'at ve'imharbe yochel. Sweet is the year of the one who works. If little, if a lot, yochel, he will eat. So the explanation according to Rashi is, Mitukat shnat ho'veit, the one who does avoda in the Mikdash, the one who brings a korban in the Mikdash, his year will be sweet, ima'at imarbe, no matter whether he brings something small or something big, shu yashen velo yareh. He sleeps without any fear, because he's brought the korban and served Hashem, and therefore yochel, he'll be rewarded, he will get his char. You see over here, ima'at imarbe, it doesn't matter, you will be rewarded. Vada ba'ava mar meocha, birvot ha-tova, Rabu Ochlea. Uma kisharon lebalav. When there is great goodness, then rabu ochlea. Then there are many to eat. Uma kisharon lebalav. And what is the value to a Kodesh Baruch Hu? As Rashi says over here, Hashem doesn't need our korbanot. So when bervota tova, when there are lots of korbanot, then the kohanim are the ones who are the beneficiaries. They're the ones who are eating it. It's not Hashem. Makishron lebalav. What does it do to help God? God doesn't need more korbanot. When there are more korbanot, the kohanim are beneficiaries, not Hashem. The idea being that Hashem doesn't need a lot. Hashem just needs your kavanah, needs your intent to be correct. Tanya, I'm Rabbi Shimon ben Azai. Boreh maktiv parashat korbanot. Look how interestingly, when it comes to all the parashat korbanot, shno lemarahem lokel velo elukim el Hashem. The Shem Hashem that is used by the korbanot is consistently yudke vavke. We never use see the word elukim, and we never see the word kel that is brought there. Shlo titen pitchon pel baldin lachlok. It's to protect against apikorsim coming and saying that, well, this God needs this korban, this God needs this korban. As if there are different gods here, it's consistent throughout to show you there's only one God. And number one, it's irrelevant what you bring because it's all about God and you're coming out to Hashem. But also, importantly, there's no distinction. There aren't different gods over here. Whenever Bishor Agas and a very big fat oxen, it says, Yishayriach Nichoach LaShem. Both a duck and in the thin bird, it says, Yishayriach Nichoach LaShem. Mincha and a flower offering, it says, Yishayriach Nichoach LaShem. The same refrain as we had in our Mishnah, that it doesn't matter how much you bring or how little you bring, as long as your attitude and your intent is l'shamayim, that's what matters over here. And you think maybe God needs it? You need to bring more because God is the one eating, which was the prevalent view amongst those that worshipped the Avodah Zarah that day, that you have to bring bigger and better gifts, because the gods needed more, and they wanted more. And so then you kept bringing bigger and better things, because if things were going wrong, it means they weren't fed well, they were unhappy somehow. But that's just not true with the Kodesh Baruch Hu. It has nothing to do with the size, it's nothing to do with his needs to eat, because Tamal Omar, Kimir Av, Lo Omar Lach, Kili Tevel Umloa. Everything belongs to me, so what do I need to tell you? When I'm hungry, I can take whatever I want to take. V'nemar, Kili Ko Chaito Yar, Behemot Bar Elif. Because it belongs to me, every wild animal of the forest and every animal on the thousands of mountains. Yadati kolof harim, viziz sadai imadi. I know every bird of the mountains and the creatures of the fields are subject to me. Imerav, lo omar lach. If I were hungry, I wouldn't tell you. Ki li tevel umloa. Because everything belongs to me. Everything in the world is mine and I can take what I want. Ha'ochel basar abirim v'dam atudim eshteh. Do I eat the flesh of bulls? Do I drink the blood of goats? So again, here you see that Hashem is in control of everything. I don't need you to bring me korbanot to eat. I can take what I need and I can get what I need without your help. Lo amarte lechem zivchu kadei sheteamar eser rotzono v'yaseh rotzoni. I'm not telling you to come and bring a korban. Again, this is a very common view of the Avodah Zarah, and this is coming to dispel that, which is, don't think that I told you to bring korbanot before me, because if you do what I ask you, then I will do what you need. I mean, there's a quid pro quo over here. If you take care of me, I'll take care of you. Lo lirtzoni atem zofchim. You're not bringing it for my benefit. El lirtzonchem atem zofchim. You're bringing it for your own benefit. So meaning that your kavanah, when you bring the korban, not as a benefit to Hashem and not to give hana to Hashem, because I wouldn't have made you go through all this trouble just for me. It's for you. It's for your benefit. And that's how you have to view the bringing of a korban as being your benefit. Shneamar. The pasuk says, "Litzonchem et tizbachu," that you bring it voluntarily and for your benefit. Rashi says, with regards to litzonchem, that you have to bring it for your own benefit and voluntarily. It says, "Litzorech atzmechem," it's for your benefit. "Likayem mitzvotai," that you will then keep my mitzvot. "Shetei kapara lachem bekach," that you will attain atonement through that. Davar acher, litzonchem tizbachu, litzonchem zibchu, l'datchem zibchu. That you have to bring it willingly, it has to be of your own volition, for your own benefit, and it has to be with your knowledge, ledat. You need to know that you're bringing a korban. How do you know someone who's engaged in kodashim unintentionally, or not thinking about it, that it doesn't work? The shechita has to be done, the ben abakar. Amalo, Zobi Adenu, that we know already. We have that limud already. La'akev minayin. I'm asking, where's a duplication of this idea that would make it me'akev, that if you don't do it, and you don't have kavanah for the shechita of the korban that you are bringing, how do I know that that disqualifies the korban? As Rashi says, mitasek, if you're involved in something else, you're thinking about something else when you do the shechita, how do I know that that disqualifies the korban over here? Tamalomar, lirtzonchem tizbachu, datchem zivchu. So that it says you should bring it voluntarily, and one of the limudim, as we said before, was lidatchem. You need to bring it with knowledge that you are bringing it and awareness that you're bringing a korban over here. So that's how he views it as being something important. The Ramban ala Torah in Perek Aleph of Vayikra, Pasuk Tet, brings an important principle. And he says over here, I want to explain what the purpose of the korbanot is. And over there he goes through how each part of the korban that you bring is representative of the individual, as if this individual is being placed on his back and it brings kapara. He says, "Ba'avur shemasei bnei adam nigmarim b'machshava b'dibur maseh." People's lives are broken down into thoughts, speech, and action. So therefore, Hashem says you should bring korbanot that take care of those. Yismoch yadav alav. You do smicha, which is the maseh. Be'izvadeh b'piv. You do vidui, which is a kapara for the sins of speech. Be'isropeish hakerav klayot. And then you burn on the fire the innards and the klayot. Shem klay machshava v'tava. Because those are the source of thought and impulses. Ve'akraim, keneged yadav raglav shel adam osim kol melachto. And the kraim that go under his back, that's keneged the hands and feet of the individual. Yisroch adam on his back, keneged damo b'nafsho. You put the dam on his back as if it's your own life. That's what you put on his back. Kedei sheyachshov adam basoto kol ele, ki chet chata lelukav begufo nafsho. Person understands when they sin, they're sinning to God with their whole being. And therefore, ra'oi lo shishpoch damo. And if you violate the word of the king, you deserve to die. V'yisrov kufo, and they should burn him. Lulei chesed ha-borei. Had it not been for the chesed of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so lakach v'menu t'mura, that he accepts in exchange for that. Damo tachat nadmo, nefesh tachat nefesh. Roshei avarim keneged roshei avarav. V'mano l'chriot b'hem mori Torah shitpalel alav. And so the Ramban explains that that being the purpose of korbanot, and he quotes our Gemara. Bo'urei maktib parshat akron barnot. Doesn't say kel, doesn't say elukecha, doesn't say elukim, shakai, tzvakot, eliyud, vekei, vavkei, shema miyuchad. It's only the shema yuchad, v'zvicha l'shem levado. Sh'lo yitkaven l'davar acher ba'olam. Rak l'shem levado. He has to only focus on God. And that's why in Savat HaKorbanot, there's only yudkei, vavkei, because it's uniquely focused on Hashem alone. Rav Soloveitchik, Zatzal, in Alatshuva, takes this a step further. He also, it's written in the Machzor, the Rosh Hashanah, that they published of the Rav Soloveitchik. He also writes it there as well. The basic idea, it's a beautiful concept here, that even though the Torah says that human sacrifice is not allowed, that's not really true. It says that God really does want you, and he wants you to sacrifice yourself for Hashem. And it's only because of the Chesed Hashem that a person is able to redeem themselves through a korban, not bringing themselves as a korban. That's what happens at the Akedah. At the Akedah, finally Yitzchak is redeemed off the Mizbeach by a korban. And in the Gada of Rosh Hashanah, it says, the story of the binding of Isaac, the Akedah is based on the concept of unconditional self-sacrifice. From one perspective, Judaism does not reject the idea behind human sacrifice per se. The Torah unequivocally renounces human sacrifice based upon Hashem's midat ha-chesed. His midat ha-din, however, would indeed have dictated it. The name of Hashem that appears throughout the story of the Agedah is thus Elukim, the name that represents Midat Adin. Only after the angel stops Abraham from injuring or hurting Yitzchak does the name Yudkei Vavkei, representing the Midat HaChesed, appear in the story for the first time. Up until then, the quality of strict justice had prevailed, according to which Abraham had no right to his son Yitzchak, nor to drive any pleasure from his offspring. His son, in a sense, did not belong to him. The order to sacrifice him, then, was one which had to be filled without any reservations. In a world of strict justice, the only acceptable behavior is for a man to sacrifice himself as entitled not even to his most elementary right, the right to his own self. And it's only because of the Midat HaRachamim of Yudkei Vavkei, which appears in the Parshiot of the Korbanot, which allow us then not to have to, through the Midat HaDin, sacrifice ourselves or give everything up of ourselves, but allows us to give some sort of in lieu replacement to ourselves through the Midat HaRachamim, and allows us then to continue on living. He says that's why all the korbanot and all the psukim of the korbanot only use yudkei vavkei. Mushum kach mufia tamid b'chol korbanot shem havaya v'lo shem elukim b'korbanot mitgaleh midat rachamim. Because korbanot are all about rachamim. Shabab m'koma korban shani hayiti tzarich lakviv atzmi al mizbeach. The fact that I would have to be put on the mizbeach, like the Ramban says, and you're redeemed off the mizbeach by this animal, is the tremendous rachamim of Hashem. And therefore, we use yudkei vavkei as the only shem Hashem that is mentioned by korbanot, because by korbanot there is no midat adin. There is no midat hakel. There's only midat yudkei vavkei, which is the midat rachamim, that Hashem has mercy on us and allows us to replace ourselves with the korbanot, when we should have been the ones on the mizbeach, we should have been the ones that were mukrav lifnei Hashem. And of course, what we just learned in the Gemara, when we don't have mizbeach, when we don't have korbanot, the learning of the Torah to korbanot, and davening and saying the words of the korbanot, are what replace the korbanot themselves. And with that, we complete the limud of Masechet Menachot, Adonai Acharei Alei Yisaron, Eslik Ala, Masechet Menachot.